It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee. And my goodness, your mic isn't working well. He's going to switch. He's Adam Van Wee anyway.
Yes, I am.
Yeah,
there I am. Yeah.
That's, you can tell through the headphones if something's going well or not, and it wasn't. Anyway, thank you all for tuning in today. The regulars, you know, you're the ones that keep us going. And if you've just tuned into the show for the first time, try to stick around for a while. We talk about all kinds of fun things, all having to do in the world of finance. And there is nobody in this country that is untouched by the world of finance, because we talk about personal finance. So unless you redirect us, which is easy, we will talk about topics of interest to us, current events, that kind of thing. But if you have something you'd rather talk about or questions, just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, 222-TALK. And the callers will always go to the head of the line, and we'll discuss whatever it is that is on your mind. We will have a trivia question today, as always, right after the first break. And we have just so much to say, because it was quite a week. And I'll tell you what I learned about economics this week.
What did you learn about?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you learned about politics then?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a lot of that, and there's going to be a lot of it this week as well.
Yeah, and the market was, what's the right word? I guess kind of tepid about the whole thing.
I don't think the market really reacted to anything.
Not really. And we had a nice little finish going into the weekend, which always makes us happy. The mornings that we come on Saturday and we sound the most chipper, it's because Friday closed well.
It doesn't, well, it depends how the rest of the week went, but yeah, it does help.
Yep. Anyway, the one thing I noticed this week that you're probably going to start with anyway was the shortest bear market in history is history.
That's right.
How about
that? It's true. We hit a new all-time record on the S&P 500 this week, and the breadth wasn't quite there. Small caps and mid caps are not back to where they were, and but they are in an uptrend, which is great, and they're slower to recover. We've talked about this a lot, and it's mainly just because of how they are positioned with COVID, because they when a large cap company, let's say a manufacturing company, gets a shutdown in the U.S., it's very likely that they have manufacturing plants in other countries, that they have sales in other countries, and so they're not going to have 100% of their revenue cut off or their supply cut off. Now, you look at a small cap company, it's very likely that they have one source of manufacturing or one area that they do most of their sales, and if that gets cut off, that's 100% of their supply or their sales. So I think that is the theory behind why small and mid caps are lagging the larger caps catching up to these all-time records. So that is something that you could potentially invest off of if you wanted to, but it's I do think that eventually we will see small and mids catch up to the rest of the market. And once again, the NASDAQ was the big winner. Tech stocks still on fire. They gained about 2.7% on the NASDAQ. S&P was up 0.7%, and the Dow was actually down 0.7%, which is more or less flat for that index. From a COVID perspective, things are looking a lot better. Case counts are trending down through most of the U.S., as are hospitalizations and deaths, and it's actually true throughout the world except for several European countries. It looks like we might be getting a little bit of a second wave, particularly in Spain. They're really seeing caseload increase. So it just goes to show you that the lockdowns, it's dubious whether or not that is worthwhile. It's good from a keeping hospital beds open perspective, but it is not going to stop the virus. There's really nothing short of either herd immunity or a vaccine is going to stop this thing. So
it'll peter on its own. But that
perhaps.
That could take a long time.
I mean, that's herd immunity from
more or less. True. So. Got nothing else to live for.
So yeah.
Bye-bye.
But yeah, we're seeing herd immunity actually, or there's a lot of thought that herd immunity is approaching faster than what was initially suspected, particularly in the U.S. and India. There's really a lot of misinformation about the disease out there. And actually, our trivia question is going to center around that. We'll get to that after the first break.
Yeah, speaking of misinformation.
Yeah, it's a really good one, I thought anyway. So earnings season is now unofficially closed, with Walmart pretty much blowing out their report. And that's been the trend for big box retailers this quarter. It was a pretty historic earnings season, as you would have to go back to 1999 to find a time when companies beat their earnings targets at a higher rate than they did this quarter. Now, if you flash back to March, and if you had told me I would be saying this right now, I would not have believed it, because in the midst of the pandemic and shutdowns, for companies to be beating at a rate that's the highest in 20 years, that's pretty surprising. 76% of companies reported beating on their earnings targets. And on the revenue side, we saw 66% of companies beat their targets. And that is the best season we've had in 2 years. So on the revenue side. The strongest number of the season, though, was on forward guidance, which was overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, normally, I've never seen anything like that before.
No, me neither. Normally, about the same number of companies raise their forward guidance as lower their forward guidance. So the net is right around zero. However, this quarter, 12% raised and only 3% lowered, for a net of plus nine, which is the highest I don't know if there has ever been a higher
nine season. Nine is bowling a 300 game.
Yeah, it's crazy. So if you're looking for reasons that the stock market is going up, look no further than earnings.
That's the truth.
Big box retailers, as I mentioned, had a good quarter, but so did Tesla. Since their since their announced 5-for-1 stock split, the stock has gone on a tear over 50%, reaching $2,000 per share. By the time they split, it might be time for another split.
Here's a trivia question that isn't really the trivia question, so you can't earn anything with it. How many times in the past year has Tesla risen 50% in 8 days?
Good question. I don't know.
Four.
Wow.
And including the
That's
one
crazy.
Just well, this streak is not necessarily ended, but the statistic that we're using ended Friday. We could carry on Monday.
It was not that long ago we were sort of laughing at Elon Musk for saying he had an offer to take it private at 300 and change.
347 or something like that, and it was way below that.
Yeah, and now it's at 2,000.
Oh, and the SEC was all over his
case. He got his hand slapped
now,
on that
I can just see him sitting back thinking, why did they not let me do that?
So the economic data was a little more mixed than it has been lately, except in housing. Look no further than the Home Builder Sentiment Survey, which came in at a 78, which is higher than the pre-pandemic high of 76. Housing starts came in better than expected. Building permits were better than expected. Existing home sales increased by almost 25% in July, and mortgage foreclosures were lower than expected. However, on the other side, mortgage delinquencies were much higher than expected, coming in at 8.2% versus the expected 4.4%. And then mortgage applications also dropped 3.3% from last week. But overall, pretty overwhelmingly positive news out of housing.
Yeah, if we had an actual Congress doing actual work instead of playing actual toys that they're playing with on the way to an election, they would have renewed already the stimulus checks and that sort of thing. That when there's any weakness showing, it's because people now have been cut off. And they are not spending quite the same. They're not quite as optimistic and so on. All they got to do is restart that stuff. Just get together, make a deal, put it out there. I don't care if it's a skinny deal or not. It's so stupid. But anyway, we digress. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question. This week it's Adam's, but it is brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888, and he will probably answer the phone.
Correct, and he does great work.
Yes, he does.
All right. A recent survey, and I'm not going to tell you who did the survey so you can't go Google it, because I was able to find it. I'll tell you at the end.
Boy. But stingy with Ken's money, aren't we?
Definitely. We're financial planners. That's how we're supposed
to
be, right? Yeah. So a recent survey was taken of 1,000 American adults, and the survey asked them what percentage of the U.S. population they believe has died from COVID-19. And I want to know what that percentage was. So somewhere between zero and 100.
The average American answers the question.
The average American thinks that what percent of the U.S. population has already died due to coronavirus?
All right. I think that's a very fair question.
All right.
Needless to say, it's probably not very accurate, but it is an opinion. All right. How many of you get a W-2 in the spring? Probably a good share of you. How many get a 1099 in the spring? There's probably a pretty good share of you there, too, because a lot of people get both. What is it? Well, 1099 means that you are working for yourself for someone else. And it has various and sundry names. The newest name that's come into, in my perspective anyway, from the last few months or years, is called the side hustle. What's your side hustle? That's how people are going to go make more money. Well, they pick up a 1099 job. Now, you might remember those with some different names like gig work, freelancing, temporary work, contracting, and good old-fashioned self-employment. If you don't have one, if you don't have a 1099, you probably know people who do and probably have people that get quite a few of them. The one that I'm interested in, because 1099s are used for other things too, it's the 1099 MISC or miscellaneous. That means you're working and someone's paid you to work for them, but not as an employee. So what happens to those of us, and I am one, I am a, well, I sort of crossed over a line because of tax reasons, but the kind of work we have done for years and years is 1099 work. We were subcontractors or freelancers. And you can start your own company and pay yourself either way that you want to. So that's kind of up in the air. But the point is very simple. The difference is who pays for things like fringe benefits and what kind of an hourly rate you're going to get. Now, there are people who sort of take offense at the fact that so many of us are doing this on the side. And those people, unfortunately, in some places are, shall we say, very powerful. And their motivation is always suspect. They say things like, oh, it's all about you. I'm going to tell you something, folks. I don't care who's saying it. It could be a politician. It could be an attorney. It could be anybody. When they say it's all about you, turn around and run, because it is not going to be all about you. I promise you. They're do-gooders who are trying to paint the wagon white. And I just hate it. In fact, now they've come up with another one. They're fighting to make the 1099 people into W-2 employees. And what they're using now in court is they're saying they want to correct the designation to employee status. To correct it, not change it or mandate it. It's to correct it. So here's the hard sell. They want to assure you that you will receive a fair wage and full benefits. Now, that matters to some people. It doesn't matter to everyone, because there are some people who don't want benefits. Perhaps they have them on their W-2 job and they don't need them on the side. Others know that they can save a lot of money because they're doing real well, and they can open up some retirement plans. Adam and I go through this all the time in our day jobs, where you can put away so much more pre-tax money for your own retirement if you are working as a subcontractor. And it can make the difference in your quality of life later on. It's easy to sell, though, because the first thing that happens with a 1099 person is that you wind up paying the full 15.3% for Social Security and Medicare. And when you think about that, out of the first $139,000, I think it is this year, you're paying 15.3% right out of your pocket. Yep, it does make you stop and think. But then you remember, well, I'm getting so much more per hour, and half of that's deductible, and I can do all this other stuff. But what else do you have? You have freedom, which is really nice. You can work basically from anywhere on most of these jobs because they're computer-based, and you can schedule your hours. You can work weekends. You can work nights. It doesn't really matter. It's all about freedom. So what do you do to make the difference? The difference is defined by the Labor Department. The employer of an employee has the right to tell them what to do, when to do it, how to do it, when it should be done. But a 1099 person gets a contract or an order, whatever it is, that says, all right, here's what I want done. Now, you might have an end date on it, you might not, but he's not going to tell you how to do it, when you have to show up for work, and any of that. Why did this become so important lately? Well, the revolution that started before COVID was for ride sharing. It started out with Uber, and then it went Lyft, and now there's delivery services that are getting a lot of attention also. Adam, you use at least one of them.
Shipt, and yeah, mm-hmm. there's a bunch of them, DoorDash,
yeah, and
Grubhub.
The more people use these things, because it's so darn convenient.
Oh, it's amazing.
So California, of course, doesn't like it. They want rideshare people to be employees so they can get all the fringe benefits and they don't have to pay half of their Social Security. And, you know, life is just such a dream for these people. So they have introduced and then passed and then gotten signed Assembly Bill 5 or AB 5, affectionately known by them as the Gig Worker Bill, which I find to be a complete and utter misnomer, because this would sound like it's good for the the rideshare people, when in fact 4 out of 5 of them object to it. Why? Well, let's see. They can't just flip on their light because they have an hour and they want to pick up some money before they go home, or they can't go out if they're laid off or have a day off and pick up some, their side hustle money. No, no, no. The employer would have to tell them when, where, how, and so on and so forth. So, what happened? Well, it got signed into law in January, and they've been fighting it since. The deadline imposed after all the infighting was for Thursday night at midnight. So prior to Thursday night at midnight, Lyft and Uber announced to the California court system that they would suspend operations at midnight. And if you want to get your Lyft at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, too bad.
Nope.
You're not going to have it. So, of course, the appeals went on and on and on, and some stuff happened, not to many people's surprise, I suppose. But let's think about more than rideshare here. How about the riders? They couldn't be assured of getting their car, right? You might be late for work, any of that stuff. Drivers would be unable to schedule how many hours and what hours they would work, so if they had a W-2 job, it would probably interfere. Freelance writers, this is a good one. Freelance writers write pieces constantly, and they have several sources. They ship them out to people to see who will buy the story. Right? That's how journalism is done these days for a great deal of it. Well, if you do more than 35 pieces for any one publication in a single year, the freelance writer becomes an employee of that publication and is no longer allowed to sell to anybody else. So you have to keep tabs on them and not sell any more than 34. IT professionals usually, and there's some other professionals in there too, but they'll take a gig, like maybe it's got 6 weeks. So they do 6 weeks, complete it, get paid, take a couple of weeks off, go surfing, whatever. They're going to miss that. A lot of people just don't like to be directly supervised, and I think the ability to work from home has done a great deal for that. I think the more people you have on W-2, the more people you're going to want to have the supervisor right on the system. And I mentioned the part about much better fringe benefits available to people who are on the 1099 system. Now think about somebody doing a consulting gig. If they make you an employee when you were hired to be a consultant, are you going to tell the exact truth and the whole truth to your employer? Are you going to make yourself maybe look a little bit good so you might get a raise? A consulting arrangement is there because you are able to be face-to-face with nobody superior over anybody else and their opinions. It's absolute honesty. I've done it for a long time, and that's the only way it can work. Who else is fighting this thing? Well, the labor unions. Figures, doesn't it? Because 1099ers aren't going to join a labor union. That's just not going to happen. In 1983, about 20% of Americans were unionized. That is now down to 10.3%. So they've fallen roughly in half. The liberal Brookings Institution blames several forces, including things like the right-to-work jobs. They're going to try to cancel right-to-work laws. All right, so what happened? Well, the resistance in California put up Proposition 22, and they actually have it on the ballot, but that hasn't been voted yet. So in the face of the threats from Uber and Lyft to shut down, a judge came on and ruled that they're going to postpone it for a while yet. So I'll have the final say when the final say is set, and not until. But it's interesting that the judge who passed it and Governor Jay Moonbeam Jr. signed it into law, that judge was appointed by his father, Jay Moonbeam Sr., when he was the governor of California. Vote carefully, people. This stuff could impact everybody if they let it in the Congress. They want to do it to all of us. All right, don't go away, Adam. We've got a bunch of fun stuff on the other side. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I want to make a quick wrap-up, something to watch for on the topic of the 1099 employees. At the federal level, this thing is called the PRO Act, P-R-O. You know how Washington likes to hide behind monikers and acronyms and such. This is the PRO Act. It's already passed the House. It can't get a vote in the Senate because McConnell is doing the right thing and holding it up. If we were to lose the presidency and the Senate and the House, then this would pass.
It's a done deal, yeah.
Yeah, it would be an absolute done deal. It probably wouldn't take the first week to get it done.
Nope.
And all of you Uber and Lyft drivers and all you Uber and Lyft customers would be absolutely up the creek. Know that, listen for it, and remember, the PRO Act is nothing like what it sounds. It is a very, very detrimental thing. It would cause layoffs galore. The job losses would be staggering. Vote carefully, but also, if you're in one of those businesses, driving for Uber or Lyft or something, make some noise.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
You have to. You absolutely have to, or they're going to get you. Like I said, it's already a done deal in the House. That's scary.
We were just talking about it during the break. If you drive for Uber and let's say you like working nights and you figured out that you can make a bunch of money driving people home from bars between 11 and 2 a.m.
while doing a great public service, I might.
Absolutely, and keeping drunk people off the road, which is great. And right now, I would assume that you can make well over $15 an hour doing that, because each one of those fares, you can probably get a bunch in an hour, and each one is going to pay you $5 to $10, and you can probably do a handful of them.
Yeah.
And so now,
average trip length would be a few blocks.
Right. And so now this would be canceled. You would have to take an hourly wage. And so what is your incentive to go out and try and hustle and make that money? Because they're going to pay you $10-$15 an hour, and that's it. So how does that benefit you? It doesn't. Only a politician would see that as a benefit.
It just doesn't make any sense. And I would be less concerned, except for the fact that it's passed the House and the election's coming up. And we need all the incentive that we can get to make sure that people don't give away any of our freedoms.
All right. Trivia question still hanging out there. A recent survey asked 1,000 Americans what percentage of the population they believe has already died from coronavirus. And I want to know what that percentage was that they guessed that have already passed away from coronavirus.
And we're not giving you any hints on this one either.
No, and that's 222-TALK, 222-8255.
All right, what else is happening in the big world?
All right, so back in February, we sent out a series of emails, but there was one that I wanted to kind of rehash today and just kind of go over and see how I did, because it was we were trying to say to everyone, don't sell out. And February 27th was right in the middle of that really steep decline. The market had already gone down more than 10%.
Yeah, that started on the 23rd, I think.
Yep. So we were in a correction, but not a bear market at that time.
Right.
So this is what I wrote. And I'm going to skip some of it because it just references charts and other websites that you can't look at. So just cutting out that part of it. So, dear valued clients and friends, every time the market goes into a steep decline, people look for a reason as to why this time is different. The truth is that this time is nearly never different. The coronavirus is scary, and the media is doing their best to make sure you know just how scary it is. That was the opening. And then I talked a little bit about what was happening in China, but then I got to the situation in Florida. So living in Florida, we have firsthand perspective on how government bureaucracies handle potential disasters. 7 months ago, Hurricane Dorian devastated the Bahamas and looked like it might unleash on Florida as well. Government officials started issuing warnings well ahead of the storm. A state of emergency was issued in 26 counties. Evacuations were ordered. Sporting events were relocated, delayed, or canceled. School was canceled. And in general, the state was put on lockdown for almost a week. What happened? The hurricane turned to the northeast, and Florida's coast was hit with the equivalent of an average summer storm. The reason that this is important is that governments, like all bureaucracies, are going to err on the side of caution when issuing warnings. No one looks back on Dorian and faults the government for over-preparing the citizens of Florida for a potentially deadly hurricane. However, if a deadly hurricane hits and the government has not prepared its citizens adequately, the consequences are severe. Remember Hurricane Katrina. The situation with coronavirus is similar in many ways. In the coming days and weeks, we are going to hear things from the CDC, the WHO, and other government officials that sound frightening. We have already seen headlines this morning from the CDC about how to properly wear a mask. There is some debate in Congress about how much money is needed to fight the coronavirus, and the numbers range between $2.5 billion and $8.5 billion. The CDC has also stated there will likely be cases of coronavirus spread in the United States. All of these things make us uneasy, and that nervous feeling causes us to want to react. None of these warnings should be taken as a reason to panic. However, that has not stopped the market from panicking. It clearly has. Depending on when you read this, we are near or at correction levels, which represents a 10% pullback from recent highs. Corrections happen about once per year on average, and we have not seen one since December of 2018. That puts this one, should it officially turn into a correction, right on time. The good news is that while they are painful and feel terrible, they are typically short-lived. The market takes about 54 days on average to recover from a correction. The most common questions we are getting right now are, one, what should we do? And two, is this time different? The answer to the first question is do nothing. As painful as it is, selling in these situations usually leads to greater losses than staying the course. Trading algorithms are programmed to keep selling until small investors have sold out of the market and are sitting in cash, in which case they promptly start buying at a big discount. By the time you are willing to get back in the market, it is already too late. The second answer is that this time is very likely not different, despite the scary headlines and government warnings. Sit tight, wait 54 days, and things will likely return to normal. So
now I'm curious, 54 days later, you know, it got a lot worse after
you
said
that.
Yeah,
it did. It did.
But what happened 54 days later?
We were already on the way back up.
Yeah.
So
quite incredible.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. But like I said, the shortest bear market in history is now history.
And now in the last 100 days, the market has rallied over 50%.
Yeah.
The S&P has. So,
but now let's talk a little realism. In our day jobs, we manage millions and millions of dollars for a lot of people. And I can truthfully tell you that a lot of them were scared.
Yep, that's true.
And I couldn't fault any one of them for being scared.
No, I mean, this one was scarier than the last several little market actions we've had because it was based on something that was real.
Yeah,
whereas
right.
the last ones were based on things that were not real.
Yeah, we like to point to things like the December 18 debacle when people woke up and turned the calendar over to December and said, I'm going to sell things.
And it was
and we kept
there
asking.
Was no reason.
Yeah,
there was
asking.
No reason.
Why? Why? And there was no answer to that question.
No. And
therefore,
it
had to be false.
Going into December, I believe our average client was up a decent amount.
Yeah.
And come December, we were down for the year.
Gave it away.
Yep, all of it.
But we told everybody that we can't find a reason why it happens. Therefore, we think it's an aberration. Therefore, our advice is to hold the line. And then we'd go home shaking all night and look at the market futures in the morning, down again, and think, oh, my God, how long is this going to be? Until one day. And it just got over, and it started up again.
Yep.
I mean, if you were out, I promise you, you weren't going to get in for several days of that uptrend.
Oh, absolutely.
You were scared to death by then to get back in.
No doubt.
You would have lost a lot.
It's true. And in that time, if you hold anything that paid dividends and you reinvest like we would recommend, you were reinvesting at that lower level, and now it's back, and you have actually more money. Once the market reaches the same level it was before, you would have more money than you did before. So getting out, even if you timed it perfectly, you can't get out and get back in and time both of those things perfectly. It is impossible. It is tough enough to make one perfect decision. It is darn near impossible to make two perfect decisions.
That would be like six coin tosses in a row and winning them all.
Yeah, it's statistically very unlikely.
Yeah, that was the 2016 Iowa primary.
That's right.
But that's another story. Anyway, we always do look for that underlying reason. Now that we're talking to people now, and of course people are getting a little scared now coming off the virus, although the market's holding up very well despite that.
Actually, in times like these, forward returns more often than not, actually almost overwhelmingly, 93%. So are better than average. So
And there's like a 93% chance, historically speaking now, of a 10% increase in the market over the next year at least. And sometimes way more than that. So, you know, if you want to look for a reason to be optimistic, we've got those galore.
Looks like we have a caller. We'll get it on the other side, though.
Bosco, we'll take you right after the break because it's coming up in about 15 seconds. But if you want to look for a reason and you're thinking about the election, that could be a reason. So take that one separately. We'll be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794 and let Troy do it. Good morning, Bosco.
Morning, y'all.
How are you?
Excellent. Out here doing a little walk. The weather's fabulous. I can see Canada from here.
Wow.
Nice. Nice.
Victoria, you know?
Nice. Very nice.
Yes, it is.
Stay out of the cities.
Sir?
Stay out of the big cities.
Yes, no, I agree. I agree. Portland, you can have it.
No kidding.
What a crime.
Yep.
Curiosity here with the stock market and the currency system and China trying to wiggle their way into both of those. You know, the overinflation, I guess is what you would call it with them, and their currency, how they manipulate it up and down. You know, I mean, what our currency system essentially is made up with of the strongest, you know, the dollar, the Deutsche Mark, et cetera, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the powers to be that would allow them into their currency, into our currency system, I mean, the world currency system, and with the stock, our stock market, you know, who would allow them into those two systems?
Well, let's start with the Federal Reserve, the IMF, the World Bank,
the UN,
the Congress, and I could go on.
Okay.
Yeah, we're fighting something of a headwind that way. In fact, Trump was the first president to ever acknowledge the fact that China was a currency manipulator. That only happened in the past several months, and they've been manipulating their currency since they let them into the trade organization. So they either freeze the value or they devalue it as needed. So if it's going to crash, they don't let it, and it's not based on a gold standard. But behind the scenes, guess who's buying the gold bullion all over the world?
That would be China.
Yeah, it would be. And they're using money that they get from selling our treasuries to do it, too. So they're trying to hurt us twice.
So do you think, you know, we see this every day, you know, and you hear about, you know, these researchers, you know, being bought by China, you know, to do their dirty work until they're exposed. Couldn't they just essentially manipulate, buy people off within those institutions that you were talking about?
I mean, like the WHO, for instance? They own the WHO completely.
Yes,
they put their guy in it.
I mean, yeah, ideal example, yes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so now then, as far as the stock market, is that also those institutions that would allow them into the American stock market?
Well, I don't know that the stock exchanges, it depends what you consider the market. The exchanges would be more than happy, I'm quite sure. And I think most of the big banks in the country would be the same. The same people that allowed us to have a Federal Reserve 107 years ago. And look what it's done. We've lost over 96% of the value of the dollar in 107 years since the Fed came into being. What's the purpose here? Is the purpose to protect us, or is the purpose to, as Griffin says in one of my favorite books, The Creature from Jekyll Island, He says the purpose of the Federal Reserve is to fund liberal projects around the world on the backs of the U.S. workers. That's my favorite pull quote from that entire book. What can you say? You realize we're being used.
Well, you can just, your blood pressure goes up after you really understand how they've, you know, worked this like slaves, essentially, you know.
Yeah, I was reading it for the first time about probably 12 to 15 years ago, and I'd pick up the book at night when Sarah and I were watching TV at home, and I'd read about three pages, and she said my face got all red, and I slammed the book down and wouldn't pick it up for another 24 hours. Manny, you want to read a depressing book? The Creature from Jekyll Island.
No, exactly. Exactly. I'm going to take a stab at your
please
trivia.
Yeah.
It just came to 8%, which is probably overly, too large.
It's 9%. I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
These 1,000 people polled believe that 9% of the U.S. population has already died from coronavirus. That would be over 29 million people. And they also believe that 20% of the U.S. population has been infected, which would be somewhere in to 60-something million. Yeah, which is actually closer to the number of total tests that we've run.
Right.
And the actual numbers are about 5.8 million people have known to have been infected, and 179,000, almost 180,000 have died. Obviously, big numbers, but nowhere near 9% of the total population of the U.S. has died because of coronavirus. Just crazy what the perception is versus the reality.
Adam and I were talking in the break about the lack of knowledge of Americans today, particularly younger ones, about a concept that we called the order of magnitude. And that's a very simple thing. If you ask how many people live in America, how many U.S. people, how many Chinese people, how many Indian, what's the population of the world? They just don't have a clue. What's the national debt? They don't know. But if you told them 26.5 trillion, it would mean absolutely nothing to them. They don't know what a trillion is. And that's why these people get these wild ideas. And of course, partly from listening to political speeches too, where 160,000 people becomes 160 million people in a speech. And you know, it's just, it's frustrating as all get out if you deal in numbers the way we do and you're trying to educate people as to what's really going on. It doesn't help any of us.
Right.
Yeah, you nailed it, though.
Yep.
And you even thought you were being ridiculous. And
I thought it was too high. I was going to go for six.
we wouldn't have given you that one. But the point of our trivia is there's always something behind it that makes us want to ask it. Like, it's something ridiculous, or it's something important, or it shows a trend, or whatever. Well, this one shows how ridiculous the reporting has been on this thing, because people have this vastly inflated concept of the problem.
225 times larger than the actual number.
Yeah. You can't get people to act normally and civilly doing that.
My question came to mind, what is true, a virus, people get like the flu, I mean, it is highly contagious, but we get, I've been asymptomatic since I left, Florida, and I left Florida about the time that, the Naples, Italy, was becoming hotbed.
That was a hot one, too.
And it just happened to be happenstance that I left,
Mm-hmm.
And I've been, I eat a lot of vitamin D, get out and give an exercise.
Best
things
you can do.
May have come back to help me,
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
All right, well, I'll put you on hold, and we'll send you out a little winner prize, and I appreciate your phone call.
Thank you much for the info as well, and enjoy your show. And when are you going to have your new upstart come back on? She's got a great radio voice.
Soon.
Yeah, she'll be on again soon.
Yeah, we've had plenty of talks with her about being a periodic participant here. So,
there you go.
Very much. And I'll tell you said so, too.
Excellent. Yeah. Ciao.
Thanks for listening. Right. Thanks for calling.
All right. We had a winner.
Yeah.
That is just I think it was so perfect that he was questioning himself, doing this.
Yeah, exactly.
And he still didn't quite get up there. But anybody who had the concept nailed like that, we are definitely going to be very happy with that. So, yeah, congratulations. Good. All right, I've been wrapping up this Social Security claiming thing. I've got one more little one today. All of these are posted on our website, VanWeFinancial.com, down in the blog section. I think there are either five or six, and each one just handles a small segment of it. But I want to talk very briefly in the time remaining, which is very brief, about the suspending or payback and restarting. Now, it used to be you could do that over and over and over, but you can't anymore. But anybody who starts taking Social Security should know that within the first 12 months, you can pay everything back if you want to and restart. And you can either restart that day or you can wait all the way up to age 70. The reason this is important is because some people retire early and they take the money, and then they realize that they don't like not working, so they go back to work, and then they don't need the Social Security anymore, so they put it back and put it on the 8% a year increase run. So if you're thinking about that, if you're in your first year, that can save you and make you both a lot of money over the years. All right, we appreciate everybody being here again. It's always fun. We'll be back next week. You never know what will happen between now and then, but it is the Republican Convention, so it won't be without its fireworks. See you then. This is the VanWeFinancial Hour. Thank you for listening.